Text 51551. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, array@rte.ie. We go now to Father Brian D'Arcy. How are you doing, Brian?
I'm great, Ray. Lovely to hear from you. How are you keeping
yourself?
Great
to hear from you as well. I love talking to you because you have that set up in your house. So there's something very intimate and homely about it. I don't, like, it's different than talking to somebody in the Galway studio or somebody on a phone. It's just, I feel that you're there and you're very comfortable there.
Well, it's lovely. It's in my bedroom. As Terry Wogan, God be good to him, used to say when I used to do it with him, he used to say, now we go across to Northern Ireland where there's a man who won't even get out of bed to speak to us. So try and be holy after that if you can.
Yeah, and of course you were doing this long before people thought of working from home and broadcasting from home, and now everybody's doing it.
Yeah. I've been doing it for about 25 years now, really.
Right. You're way ahead of the posse. How are you?
I'm good, Ray. I'm very good. I'm not as good as I used to be, but then I'm not as young as I used to be either. COVID did take an effect on me, and I think that, like everybody else in the world, if you're tuned into the world at all, you couldn't be right at the present time.
No.
You can be good, you can be grand, and you can be passive, but you're waiting for the world to happen again, and you're living in an expectation. If you're lucky, many others have decided, you know, that they can't live in expectation, and they live in a kind of depression, and that's thank God I'm not that way, but I do live in hope, but I'm not comfortable yet. Do you know what I mean? I'm not just comfortable in my skin yet.
And you got COVID in October.
Yes.
And do you reckon you have what they're describing now as long COVID? Do you know if you have it?
I don't know what the official title of it is, but it is improving now this last month or so. But for 3 or 4 months, it was anything but improving. The last time I was talking to you, I hadn't improved at all, because even my voice, it was an old man's voice suddenly appeared all over the place. I'm breathing, I just couldn't do it. Going upstairs, I had to stop halfway upstairs, which just wasn't me at all.
Okay.
And I'm reasonably fit. I do, you know, 5 or 6 kilometres every day. So therefore I'm that way. But I was awfully tired and I had a foggy brain. That was the worst of it all. I just kept forgetting things. Forgetting to do things, which is, again, not like me. But you have to be patient with yourself and just say, I listen a lot to radio stations across the world. And it's the same across the world. Everybody's in this. Nobody knows the effects of COVID at all on people and what the long-term effects of it. But then again, as I keep saying, if you're here to talk about it, then you haven't had a real long-term effect of COVID. Yeah. The long-term effect of COVID are those sadly who died.
Yes. And I don't know if they're COVID related, but you've done a number of funerals in the last few days.
Yes.
And I know up the north, they're allowed 25 people at a funeral, but still nowhere near the numbers who would attend a normal funeral.
No. I was doing a funeral yesterday, and it was myself and a minister from the Church of Ireland were doing a funeral. I was saying to him, gosh, you know, John, I'm finding myself having to work three times as hard to be a third as effective as I used to be, you know, when you're trying to do funerals and trying to bring comfort to people and trying to make people at home, trying to get to them. So you can't even go to their house to find out things about them.
Yes,
do you know what I mean?
Yes, yeah.
And you have to keep distance. And in the church, they're scattered all over the place. And then there's people in cars looking at you on phones.
Right.
And it's a very, very difficult. You go to a graveyard and you have to say to the people, please don't come into the graveyard. Yeah. And it's just the exact opposite of what we should be doing, and bereavement and grief should be. It's the exact opposite, but it's the only way we can get through it. I mean, I'm not saying we shouldn't be doing this, but I do that. And you know, the extraordinary thing is, and I see it all the time, the best will in the world, when you go to greet somebody in a death, you want to hug them.
Yes. Human contact.
It's just the thing that people almost, and people have, you know, their mass.
It's sort of hardwired into us, Brian, isn't it?
It is, and it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, it is the right thing to do. But it's so hard, and I see, you know, people come in and grandchildren run to their granny and so forth, and you're to say to yourself, you know, I wish they didn't do that in one sense, because they're putting the granny or themselves at risk of something. And on the other hand, I say to myself, flip me, how can you say don't hug a granny when her husband has died? You know,
yeah, yeah.
I don't, that's the way I, I, uh, it's we're in an area that one of the things that I'm really thinking a lot about at the present time is, please God, we'll come out of this. I have to have that hope.
But we will come out of it.
And I think we are getting better at it. And we have to maintain hope. We have to maintain, you know, that steeliness within us to come out of it. We're not going to come out of it the same. We're all going to be different. The world isn't going to be the same. And we've got to change and be prepared to change. But listen, hold on, get through it at the moment and worry about what we'll do afterwards when we arrive at that point and at which point we'll be slightly better able to do it. But we need to do something about unresolved grief, because unresolved grief, and I've discovered this over the years, even in my own life. I remember when my father died, I was really young, and I was sent off to America to study, and you know, I was so busy I hadn't time to even think of it. He died very suddenly, sitting in a chair, and I come back from America, and it was about 2 years later, I got this woeful feeling of emptiness within myself, because my mother had already died when I was a young student. And so I suddenly found myself that I had a home, of course. My family would always welcome me home, but I really hadn't a home because my parents weren't there.
Yeah.
I had this crisis of, I'm nobody's child anymore.
I wasn't, but now
the next generation to die is ours. You know, that's the way we look at it. When both your parents die.
I never thought of it like that.
Yeah, well, you know, it is. we're very good at looking at the bright side.
But the unresolved grief is hugely important, and when we do get to the other side, and we will, there's going to have to be some national marking, some national commemoration, some national expression of grief. What shape do you think that should take, Brian?
Well, I think even recognising it, that we do need one day of grief, or maybe more than one day. I think if we actually get people into churches or communities, I think, first of all, I think for those with a religious bent, I do think that they find something, you know, good in the religious service. Yet, I think that's one of the good things churches do provide now, is a religious service that is meaningful to people. And I think that would be the job of local communities and parishes to do it whatever way they want. But, you know, what you want to be careful of, this, you know, there's nearly 5,000 or whatever it is, number, I don't know the precise number, but it's over 5,000. Of people who have died on the island of Ireland from COVID. But, you know, how many people have had no funeral who didn't die of COVID?
Yes. They're them as well. You know, you have to recognise them as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, they have to be recognised. Yeah. And you know, it is a terrible, terrible thing. People feel awful about it. Not able to shake hands, not able to hug, not able to go to the funeral. You know, an empty church for, I've done funerals, people like Brian Call and P.O. McCann and people like that, who would have been big stars in the music scene. And they would have had, you know, hundreds, maybe over thousands at their funeral in the church, you know. But, you know, the last funeral I did, I think that we had a big crowd, was for poor Larry, our good and great friend Larry Gogan.
Yes.
I think that was the last funeral I did that a crowd was at, you know, and you saw what that was like yourself. It was a marvellous tribute to Larry.
Yes.
And so others have died in the meantime, like Brandon Boyer and all of the others who would have had the same sort of funeral. And they've had nothing, 25 or 10 in the church. People are very upset about that. Full of enjoyment.
Because we have to start the conversation about what this, you know, national sharing of grief should be when we get out the other side.
Yes. Yeah, you're quite right, Ray. And one of the things I'm learning is that now, as I'm studying the bits I can, is that the idea of how to treat grief is changing. You know, I thought it was, you know, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross is no longer
the five stages of
grief. That's gone.
Old
now,
hat.
You know?
It is
old hat. It was very useful in its own time, and you could see it. But it's old hat because we've moved on, as you know better than most, that psychology has moved on, and the human development has moved on. And I think there's two things are clashing in people. One is that there is almost a denial of death on one hand, And on the other hand, there's a need to celebrate a life that has just ended.
Yes, yeah.
And there's a little clash. You know, we're even using language that they used to use in America for decades, and it's coming in here. They pass or pass away. Mm. And I'm not comfortable with that.
I'm not comfortable with that either. People die. Precisely.
Yes, and, yeah. You know, and it's whether it's a Christian or... First of all, you can't deny the obvious. People die.
Yeah.
Our beliefs may be something different, but the bottom line is, unless a grain of wheat dies, nothing comes from it. Mm. I mean, new life comes from nature.
Why do you think people prefer to use, it's a softer term, isn't it, to pass? They've passed.
I think it's gentleness.
Does it, in a way, back to what you just said there, does it in a way deny the reality of death?
I feel so. I think it's that's what it is. I remember years ago I was in a ho- and if I'm talking nonsense, I know you'll tell me. but I remember years ago I was studying in America in Oaklands and I was working in a parish in Oaklands to keep myself away, which was a largely black parish. I got a call one day to go down to a funeral home, and the funeral home was of a white lady who had died. Now, in the parish. I didn't know who had died. So I went down to it, and there was, you know, I went into the funeral home, and there was this lady sitting up in a pink dressing gown, there was nobody there, and I spoke to her and I said, I wonder where's the person who's dead? And then I realised that was the person who was dead. It was the lady sitting up with the nails done, sitting on a chair, all dressed up, and that was the lady who had died. And there was this huge denial of death. And then I went to the family afterwards and I said, can I do something? Can you tell me something about your mother? And we could say at the Mass. And they said to me, we haven't seen our mother for nearly a decade now. Just make up something yourself. And they went to the graveyard, and the graveyard was done. They sat in their cars at the gate looking at a television at me burying their own mother.
It broke my heart
and I said, I hope we never come to that. And do you know what it is? I'm not sure that we're that far off it in some cases.
We were talking to Dr. Mary Cassidy yesterday. I'd read her book Beyond the Tape, I think it's called. Anyway, she mentioned in the book, I didn't mention in the interview, that she insisted that her children wail and cry at her funeral. She wanted just to show that they loved her and that they're going to miss her.
Anyway, I think that's right. I think we do need to chat about what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But we need to also take account of those who died during COVID, not from COVID
yes.
but who had the same difficulties.
Yes.
Because it's much wider than
that's
COVID.
Hugely important.
Yes.
Now, Father Brian D'Arcy, I was going to say your friends, the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, are back in the news. The CDF. They do sound like some sort of, you know, operation, you know, dark glasses, dark suits, you know, people who come in threes and fours and make things happen, the CDF. So these people, McAleese claims Pope Francis raises reform only to dash it. So what happened was, somebody asked the question, German priests asked the question, can we bless a gay union? And so it went to the CDF and they came back and said no.
I think it's even a little worse than that, Ray. You're quite right in that the German bishops are at this moment thinking of bringing up in their synod that they are going to ask that question.
Right.
But actually what happened was the CDF jumped in case they'd asked that question.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And then they ask themselves a question that they could answer, rather than be caught with the question that might come from the German bishops that they couldn't answer.
Right.
You know, so it's the old horse that you build that you can knock down.
Okay.
What they did, they asked the question is, can a priest bless a couple's civil marriage? Well, nobody ever asked them that question. That's their question. And of course, they were saying that's an easy question for them to answer because the doctrine says, according to them, that you can't bless what is. And they use this phrase, which is the most awful phrase that I've heard, and you know, my head stood, papers rang me the other night when it happened, and I couldn't believe that people would say this, because you can't bless a mortal sin.
Right.
And that to me was the most shocking, awful thing that I've heard. Now, just put it this way. If that's where they're at, they cannot be taken seriously. You know, because even they've made a hypocrite out of Pope Francis. And the unusual thing is that Pope Francis has agreed to this statement. But I suppose I can understand him agreeing to the statement because it's unless he changes the doctrine of the church, he has to agree to the statement. Do you know what I mean?
I read an awful lot about it this morning. And one of the American Catholic newspapers, they suggested that, and this is like, it's a bit mad, but that it was thrown in front of him before he went to, where is he, Iraq or Iran?
Iraq, yeah.
Iraq. It was thrown in front of him before he went to Iraq and he didn't read it properly and he signed off on it and that's how it happened. That was one of the theories behind it.
That could be, but even that's a terrible thing.
It is a terrible thing if that happened, if that's the case. And this, will you explain to people what the CDF is?
It's the Congregation of the Defence of the Faith is the translation of it. This is a Latin phrase, but I'm bringing it into English for you. And it still says CDF, Congregation of the Defence of the Faith. And they're set up there. They are the people who have taken onto themselves enormous powers and have always down the ears. And even in the time of before the Second Vatican Council, they were rampant. And what they did was any people who are bringing into the church new teaching about scriptures, new teaching about theology, moral theology, new teaching about insights as to what humanity might be, and everything. And there were fantastic people, Skillebecks and Karl Rahner and people like that. And they had them silenced away. John the 23rd came in, called the council, and the people that they had silenced, he took them as the experts. Right. And he brought them back into the church. So they have been there. Now, Cardinal Bay and people like that are go along. They have always been. They broke John the 23rd's heart. They're actually were responsible for Humanae Vitae, you know, because the congregation and people that had John, that Paul VI had brought to Bude, made up of lay people, doctors and women, they said, no, you cannot say that contraception is wrong. You cannot say that. You can make a wonderful document which says the value of life and the value of openness to life and the value of all of that, but you cannot say paragraph 27 of Humanae Vitae, which says that it is wrong. And they agreed to that, but they said no.
They silenced you back in, was it 2012, was it? Because of things you'd written in the Sunday World?
Yes, 2011, 2012.
Yes.
And they tried to silence me and Tony Flannery and five other Irish guys as well. And we still are. They never spoke to me. They didn't write to me. They didn't do anything. What they did, Ray, was they sent copies of my articles from the Sunday World, copies of them, to the leader of my own congregation in Rome,
the Passionist congregation
in Rome, and they sent it to him, and they said, we're ordering you to order the local superior in Ireland to order this man to stop this, or he will be excommunicated.
Right.
So
that was very stressful. Very stressful, Brian, for you.
It broke my heart.
I was reading a clip. You gave an interview to Hot Press in 2016. You spoke to the man for 5 hours. I don't know if you remember that.
I do indeed.
But you say that it was like being abused by the church for the third time, because you were abused as a child, and then when you're in the seminary, you were abused again, and this was the third abuse.
Well, it was, and it had a bigger effect. And what the saddest, the roughest thing in me was that at that time I was totally on my own. There was nobody that I could turn to that would. And it's one of the things that I will say, the only person who rang me at that stage was actually Mary McAleese, who was studying in Rome. And she rang me personally to say, Brian, I am so heartbroken about this, you know. And we had a private conversation, but I will never forget that to Mary for doing that to me. But I was totally on my own. And I can honestly say in the book, my last book, which was, you know, it has to be said, there was one night that I got up, I couldn't sleep. And I walked round the Grand Ninniskillen and I walked over to the Calvary in the middle of the night. And it's the first time in my life, and only time, thank God, that in the middle of that, I said, would I be better off dead? And it was such a frightening thing within me, because I've dealt with so many people and continue to deal with so many people who have suicidal thoughts. And I didn't know what a suicidal thought was to that night, but I did that night. And I changed completely that night, because I said, I can't give my life to these people. I've got to take power of my own life back. And that's what I changed that night. I said, I am not leaving the priesthood. I am going to stay in. If they want to fire me, they can. And I'm not going to pass the slightest bit of remarks on them ever again. Because nobody has a right to destroy another human being for anything. Never mind the foolishness of a bit of doctrine that doesn't matter anyway.
Yeah. It's testimony to the strength of your relationship with your God that you stayed in the Catholic Church.
I would hope so. I would hope so. I have a simpler way of looking at it, Ray. Thank you for saying that. But I have a simpler way of looking at it. What you say is correct. But really and truly, the God I learned that keeps me going was the God my mother and father taught me about. That's the God that is real. The God of the bits and pieces of every day. The God and pieces, the God who loves you no matter what you do. You know, I was brought up to understand there's no way that you can do anything that would cut you off from God.
Yeah, but and this is a horrific thing, you know. And you know, I don't believe in God, but I was brought up as a Catholic, and I'm concerned about the future of the Catholic Church in this country.
Yes,
I'm concerned about the future of humankind. And I think most people are good people. Most people are good people.
Yes,
and
yes,
to see
totally agree.
That a church that's built on love.
Yes.
Would say these things that they're saying about the gay community.
It's utterly,
outrageous.
It is worse than outrageous. It is sinful in the extreme. Because, you know, even Francis himself in 2000, and I was looking at it recently, in 2013, 2015, 2016 and 2020, he has gone out of his way to say that every person is a creation of God. And whether we can bless a civil union or not is of no importance. But nobody can stop you saying that two people in love are not in love because they're sharing the life of God, because God is love. And it cannot be wrong if it is genuine love. And who needs a blessing for that? The couple themselves. Bless yourselves with the great love that you have received, and don't be waiting on anybody to tell you you can't do it.
Now, I'm just going to hold on to you. We have to take a commercial break before 4 o'clock, and we have a number of texts to get to. So just stay with us, Father Brian Darcy. We'll talk to you after this.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
I was just thinking, Brian, during the break there, that you were cancelled long before cancel culture existed. Back, you were sort of cancelled by the CDF. It's a large, complex organisation, and is it? Should we be surprised that it seems to be speaking out of both sides of its mouth?
Well, you see, what has happened is that the clerical end of the church is 3-4% of the clerical, and dwindling, and they're ruling the roost. And this is the clericalism that, again, Pope Francis has said is destroying the church. Mm. The CDF is the perfect voice of the little cleric who thinks that lay people don't matter, and that religion is a matter of the head and not of the heart. The whole point of this is that we have got to be able to say, if the church is getting in the way of God, then the church is failing, not you.
Okay. And what about Mary McAleese's call on Irish bishops to step up to the plate and say something about this latest pronouncement from the CDF?
I would love to think that they would, but I don't see it happening. The only thing I can see happening, is that I think there's a movement within the church, which is 60 years late coming since the Vatican Council, that we should try to be able to look at synod, a synodal way of doing the church. Mm. And if that comes up, then you can bring it up. But as you can see, they're afraid of that, because that's what's happening in Germany right now.
Yeah.
My view is this, and I'll say one very quick thing.
Yeah.
It's no point in us dabbling at the edges. Our theology of sexuality is a century out of date. It is a century out of date. I mean, it is.
Yeah. Synod is going to solve that, really, you know.
I think.
But I was just looking at the timeline for the Synod. They're talking about in the next 5 years, and then implemented it then within 3 years after that.
There should be nothing left by that time.
I know, that's what I was just thinking. I was going to look at the stats over the census, but there'll be nobody left by the time in 8 years' time. It's happening that quickly.
That's right. And you know, COVID has brought it forward by 10 years, I suspect.
Has it? Because people see they can survive without going to going to church. Yeah,
yeah. People have found that, you know, that the inner strength of God within themselves, and they have got round. You know, they've got to say the suppression, the regulate. I mean, here's a small example, and I'm sorry to, for anybody who has to be told that it's a mortal sin not to go to Mass on a Sunday. So that is utterly ridiculous. Yeah. The very point is that you either want to go to Mass or you don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you want to go to Mass, go. And if you don't want to go to Mass, a mortal sin is not the reason to go to Mass. No. You're not at Mass. That's a simple example that I think is very clear.
Now, they're given to me in my ear here to go to Noak. So I'll just read you these very quickly. I'm a very happy married gay man and my family and friends blessed my wedding. Brian is amazing.
That's right.
My mother died at the start of the pandemic. No funeral. I'm plagued with guilt that she didn't get a dignified send-off. I'm also filled with an emptiness and unresolved grief, as Brian described. I'm 55, yet feel lost like an orphan. And I think a few days of mourning, all those who died during COVID would be a nice way to mark those people's lives. And pass is a word that allows us to feel someone has passed or moved on to better things. And somebody else says, when my dad died a few years ago, we used the words passed away. It's just a nicer way to think of him. My mother got very annoyed with us and said, no, he died. So maybe it's a generational thing. Thank you, Father Brian, for including those who've died during this time from non-COVID issues. My dad died this year and I didn't get home, so it meant a lot to hear that. And that's from Andrea Moran, who's in Holland. And what a tonic to listen to Father Brian. He ticks all my boxes, pastoral, spiritual, pragmatic and positive too. Finally, someone who calls it out. Finally, a yes or no answer. Would you bless a gay couple?
I would bless, yes. If I can bless a submarine that's going to war, which there is a blessing for, I can bless somebody in love.
Thanks, Brian. Mind yourself. We'll talk to you soon.